Hello again, everyone. You found it. We are back. This is The Geek Dads, episode number 145. I am Ken Denby, the publisher, editor, Grand Nagus of GeekDad.com. And joining me, as usual, editor-in-chief, Mr. Matt Blum. Matt, it's been 3 weeks. We're not quite making our goal of every other week. You know, life finds a way to get in our way. But...
as always, yeah.
But I think we're doing okay. There's how are things in your chilly world?
Well, not as chilly as they were, fortunately. The snow's mostly melted, finally. And I mean, we never had it as bad as like Boston did, fortunately.
Right, right.
But
wait, you mean the East Coast isn't all the same? I thought the East Coast was all the same. That's true. You always have to remember you're technically in the South.
Mid-Atlantic, let's call it.
Yeah, okay, all right.
It was
75 and sunny here today, so, you know.
It was in the 50s here most of the day. So it wasn't bad. It was actually pretty reasonable. And quite sunny, actually, most of the day. So,
nice.
And I think we've seen the last of winter until after fall.
I know. We're gonna they have officially declared that we are in an El Nino cycle on this side. So, you know, last time we had a major El Nino cycle, there was enough flooding that all of the houses built in this one town called Alviso, which is just north of San Jose, all of the houses built there after this year have all been built 8 feet above street level.
Seems wise.
Yeah. So now, of course, everybody also is getting all right. We're gonna have a heavy rainfall year. We're in a drought. This is gonna fix everything. No, because unfortunately, the way we depend upon to get our water is snowpack. And unfortunately, there was not enough snow this winter to make a dent in the drought. So.
I mean, we may get rain. The rain will help.
Our lawns will stay green, but we will probably have water rationing it again this summer.
Yeah, that sucks.
And then, you know, all civilization breaks down, and you know, all of the Walmarters attack all of the Whole Foodsers, and. Chaos everywhere. All right, so the last 3 weeks in the geekosphere has been really, really interesting, both in good and bad ways. And I figured we would kick things off, you know, talking about over the last couple of weeks, we've lost some really important people to how definitely I grew up as a geek, you grew up as a geek, a lot Absolutely. Of people grew up as geek, obviously starting with Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah,
which seemed to come a little more out of nowhere. I hadn't realized that he had sort of a chronic condition going on.
COPD. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, he smoked a lot as a young man.
Yeah, you hardly ever saw that on screen, but yeah,
right. Well, I mean,
Spock didn't never smoke. Yeah.
Right.
But now that I think about it, I think he probably did smoke when he was on like Mission Impossible.
I think he did a couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was when you could still smoke on TV, yeah. He smoked quite a bit. I saw a lot of like backstage photos of and such of him, you know, smoking.
Yeah.
On the set.
That's a shame.
Yeah. And he admitted, I mean, he readily admitted that was probably what caused it. And it was a shock that it happened. It wasn't shock when it. And when I got the news that he had actually passed, it wasn't too unexpected because I had heard that he had been admitted to the hospital with severe chest pains.
Right. We'd heard that earlier.
When you hear that in somebody, you know, who is sick and is his age.
Yeah.
You're not too shocked when the news comes that they've
passed away. No, it's very true. It blows me away, though, the difference, you know, he and Shatner are both the same age, basically. They're like a couple of months apart, right?
Yeah.
And Shatner has, you know, aside from whatever plastic surgery he's ever gotten, has seemed hale and hearty all of his life.
Despite not exactly being in the best of physical shape.
Yeah. Although, you know, but he's, you know, he's a hardcore outdoor nut and horse rider and things like that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting. And it's kind of sad. I mean, and it makes me, it feels so weird because I have a grandmother who is still alive, who is in her mid-90s now.
Oh, wow.
Other than being deaf and a little frail, she's still sharp as a tack and you know, just, you can't imagine anything slowing her down. And it's like, when you start looking at these, you know, first of all, age doesn't mean anything anymore in some sense, or it's becoming less and less.
Up to a point.
But yeah, it's really, it's So it was a very sad day when that was announced. I mean, I grew up watching the 6 p.m. reruns out here. KTVU Channel 2 had the syndicated old series reruns every weeknight at 6 p.m.
Oh, yeah, and I watched them all the time.
Watched them over and over and over and over again. And
as soon as the videotapes were available, you know, we snapped them up because my mom loved Star Trek also. So that helped a lot. And I have an older brother. So he's also a geek. So,
yeah, I mean, I've always had to say that, you know, in the Star Wars Star Trek battle, I do love both franchises, but my heart is with Star Trek. I was always more, you know, dug into that community, watching the shows, watching the movies, reading the books. I've read hundreds of the Star Trek novelizations over the years. And, you know, I've talked about the play-by-email RPG I ran. Yeah. And so that, the Federation was just like the best example of what you could hope our future in the next 100 to 500 years could be.
Oh, absolutely. I think that the world today really owes a lot to Star Trek as a whole, and to, you know, obviously to Gene Roddenberry for creating it, and to the actors for making it come alive on screen. Just the number of influential people who were influenced by it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way to know, obviously, what would have happened if it didn't exist, but there's so many people who have said how much they've been influenced by it and who have gone on to, you know, be major figures in science and technology and engineering, you know, that the world would very likely look very different if we hadn't had Star Trek.
Now a thing that started going through my head when I was thinking about, you know, losing Nimoy and what Spock did as a character and how he obviously, the character was written, however, to be this logical creature. Spock brought that alive in some amazing ways, and with, you know, his background and inventing the hand signal and things like that. But I started thinking about this. Okay, Spock is the I think ultimate example of a character archetype, which is I sort of suggest is the Pinocchio archetype, and that is the alien character or the different character through whose eyes you see the oddities and foibles of humanity. He's the mirror in which you reflect, you know, as a writer's device, as a story device. You use Spock's commentary on things that he watches humans doing as a way to comment on those things. And I think they use that a lot in Star Trek. And then, obviously, the follow to that was Data in Next Generation. Everyone sees Spock, or Data was the Spock character, really, for that show.
Sure.
To a certain extent, Seven of Nine.
Yeah, to a degree, yeah.
Odo in DS9.
Mm-hmm.
All of it. So, but outside of Star Trek, I was trying to come up with examples of that archetype. Can you think of any examples of that archetype in other TV shows, movies? But it's an interesting thought. Maybe, you know, if we don't come up with anything here, maybe our readers, you know, our listeners can post some ideas in the comments. But I started going over to it. Okay, the Spock archetype, the Pinocchio character archetype is so strong, but we only think about it in Star Trek terms for the most part. I mean, I don't know if you could argue that C-3PO.
No, it's a little different.
No, I mean, it's different.
Because that's so much leaning towards fantasy in so many ways, because it's not even supposed to be Earth. I mean, Star Trek is supposed to be the future of our planet.
Very true. That's an excellent point. It's
to be
not
literally
about humanity.
Another galaxy.
Yeah.
I mean, and so, yeah, so they're not really commenting on humanity so much as they are on
alien nation.
Yeah.
San Francisco and alien nation. That's, although realistically that was also a takeoff on a World War II movie, but I mean, they used some of that, his naivete towards human traditions, and then played up, you know, humans' reactions to the alien traditions. But
sure.
That's a little ways there, but I don't think that's all the way there.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little thing, like, you could argue that, like, The Last Starfighter has a little bit of that, with Centauri, and then the other Alex coming to her.
The other pilot.
No, the other.
Oh, you meant Centauri.
Centauri, who's
right. He's the con man. That was Preston.
Yeah, and then I meant the one that the replicant, the one that they put there to replace Alex.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
So, who's trying to be human and failing miserably at it.
Anyway, we'll toss that out there for our listeners. Give it a thought. See if you can come up with other examples of the Spock, or as I say, the Pinocchio archetype. I don't know. No, Pinocchio is probably not the right term, because Pinocchio is more associated with Data as the toy that, or the
artificial,
the artificial one that wants to become human. But it's that. The, using the alien, and Data was this, but more Spock and so forth, as the mirror to hold up to humanity.
Yeah, I mean, Spock was definitely very different, because, I mean, Spock had no desire whatsoever to be human. He made that very clear.
Right.
And, you know.
And they wore him down anyway and made him, you know, he got a, you know, developed a sense of humor, and
He had a great sense of humor. That's the thing. I mean, that's that was the best part of the scenes. You know, when McCoy or Kirk would make fun of him, and he would just get his finger in right back at them. It was fantastic. Yeah. Although I always wondered, you know, when finally, you know, in Star Trek II, at Spock's funeral, when Kirk says that he was the most human. Every time I see that scene, I'm like, Spock would have hated that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Kirk didn't mean it insultingly, obviously, but Spock would not have liked it.
Not at all. Not at all. I'm sorry, I just had to pause a second. My wife was trying to call me. She's on her way home. Anyway, okay, so we lost Nimoy, and, you know, almost, you know, I would say very much overshadowed by that, but almost not too much less important to Star Trek was Harve Bennett.
Yeah.
We lost Harve Bennett last week, too. And I believe my understanding is of his participation, I mean, he was almost the only reason that, was it Motion Picture or what got created? And then
Star Trek 2. He didn't have much to do with the first one, I don't think. That was mostly Bob Wise, I think.
There you go.
But Harve Bennett was the one who got Star Trek 2 running. He's the one who decided that it should be a sequel to Space Seed. So he's the reason there was Khan there at all.
Right.
And he was the driving force behind the story and getting it.
So does that mean we can blame him for Cumberbatch?
No,
I guess not.
No, I think you can put that squarely on J.J. Abrams there. But I mean, I think that without Harve Bennett, it's safe to say that the Star Trek movies would have been, may not have gone on as long as they did. I mean, because the motion picture was kind of a disappointment in many ways. If two hadn't been as good as it was and done as well as it did, it's entirely possible they wouldn't have made any more.
Yeah, no, it's
also entirely possible that had they not done that, there wouldn't have been a next gen.
Yeah,
nope, or all totally the other series that came after it. So, you know, you could argue that it's entirely possible that Harve Bennett is responsible for Star Trek.
For modern Star Trek, yeah.
The huge phenomenon that it is now. I mean, it would just be the old show and one movie, possibly one or two movies, possibly, without him.
Yeah.
So
all props to him as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, and last but not least, the very sad news today, although, again, not unexpected in the general sense, the loss of Terry Pratchett finally succumbing to whatever complications of Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a real shame. Only 66 years old. He had so many more books in him that he could have written if he hadn't gotten sick.
Yeah, I mean, I would say he was prolific, too. And
oh, absolutely.
I mean, I have to say, I fully admit, I have not read a significant portion of his books. I've read a few over the years, but never dove far enough, deep enough into them to become kind of an acolyte. But it sounds like you did.
I did, yeah. I recommend it to anybody. I mean, they're all the Discworld books are worth reading. Some of them are better than others. But they're all very funny. They all have some just laugh-out-loud moments to them. And the fact that he was able to carry on that level of humor through that many books. I mean, I can't remember exactly how many, but there's over 40 Discworld novels.
Right, right.
That's huge. And to not be ultra redundant at that point, to still be able to tell new stories and different things and still be interesting.
Yeah.
Is a real talent that most
people. That's a great writer. Yeah.
Can't do. And he was just a funny, funny man. He knew how to do humor. He knew how to do fantasy. Excuse me. He was a phenomenal talent, really. I don't think there are very few others like him that I can't think of anybody else really like him who's alive now, right? I mean, Neil Gaiman has a similar level of talent, but he's not as prolific.
Yeah, I would say Douglas Adams but Douglas Adams was not that prolific.
No, but he also died a lot younger. I mean, Isaac Asimov was, in terms of prolificity, whatever. I think he's the only one I can think of off the top of my head who matches him in the sort of the geek fiction realm. I mean,
yeah. Totally. Oh, well. All right. So beyond that, there has been a number of interesting things. Actually, I was going to bring up. So first of all, we've got S.H.I.E.L.D. back. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is back from its hiatus. We actually, in the last 3 weeks, we had not yet finaled Agent Carter the last time we spoke, had we?
That's true. Yeah, I think so.
Agent Carter is over. For now,
fingers crossed.
Anyone I ever read or hear from, you know, loved that show, and desperately wanted to come back. I do
it was,
too.
It was a great show. I wish it had gotten better ratings than it did. That's the only reason I can think of why they would redo it is just because it didn't get a great audience. But hopefully they won't pull a Firefly on it.
I don't think so. And I heard, I swear I read something somewhere that whilst it had been less strong, in the first half, that by the end they had been ramping back up again. So
no, that's possible.
Feeling I get is that, Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. finished and people dropped off not knowing what the heck this Agent Carter thing was going to be. And then word of mouth started bringing people back in, perhaps, because I have not heard that strong a word of mouth for a TV show in a long time.
It was amazingly well done. I mean, as period pieces are hard to do that well, to really get a feel for the time, that they managed to make the sexism of the times realistic,
right?
But still managed to make the male characters some people you could feel were not just complete jerks.
Right. That's it. They were real people in their era with the real things that they would think because of their situation.
Yeah, the only real caricature was Howard Stark, but that was fine. He was too funny enough that it didn't really matter.
Yeah, absolutely. But so that ended up quite satisfactorily, I thought.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done. I was really glad they got that episode with Howling Commandos in there too. That was fantastic.
Oh my goodness, that was so much fun. That was really, really good. And so, yeah, so we desperately hope that that will be renewed. And then we've got Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. back. And I think what they're I'm feeling a lot of the Whedon touch in the first couple episodes in that there are things that a normal show would stretch out over like half a season, like Sky's Secret or... You know, a couple of the different plot lines that, you know, normally they would drag them out and it would get tenser and tenser. You just get sick of it. And no, they're just like, boom. Okay, now everybody knows. Boom. We've heard the word Inhumans on the show. Boom.
We'll
we
see
saw
what they're
agree.
Doing with whatever the other secret. What's her name?
Mockingbird. And Mac,
yeah.
Yeah.
But whatever their secret is, because that's, and I couldn't quite tell if, well, I don't know if anybody had. I guess that episode was a couple of days ago. But
yeah, spoilers for the next couple of minutes if you haven't watched the episode yet. But yeah,
it wasn't clear to me whether Mac had just knocked.
He just knocked him out.
Knocked him out.
Because there was an intake of breath.
Oh, okay. I couldn't quite tell. I didn't think they would kill him off. I mean,
no.
he's such a great character. And they just had him be sign on.
Yeah, no. On the other hand, there was a very audible.
They had Lucy Lawless on and killed her in the only episode that she was in. Who the hell knows?
Oh, tangential casting news: Lucy Lawless, Ash and the Evil Dead.
Oh, really?
I heard that. Yes.
Okay.
She's going to be in Ash and the Evil Dead.
Okay.
So,
cool.
You know, it's because what's funny also is that's the whole Xena team, you know.
Yeah.
It's the Raimis, it's Tappert, it's, you know,
Campbell.
It's Autolycus, you know, it's. So that looks like it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun. But yeah, no, there was an audible intake of breath after the chokehold. And Mac was just like, oh heck, now what? Because he had to, you know. So it's very interesting waiting to find out what the heck this secret is. Because, you know, they said everybody's going to be really upset when they pulled the trigger.
It's explicitly clear that they're not Hydra.
Yeah.
Which is good, because if they were, I would be real. That would be really upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that would just be total subversion of everything that's been going on.
Right. So it's some third path who they're working.
My speculation is
the general.
No, I don't feel that. My feeling is that they're on a secret mission for Fury. That Fury gave them something to do before.
Why wouldn't Fury just talk to
Coulson? Well, it might have something to do with the fact that Coulson was still not quite right. You know, came back to life, had the weird stuff in his head.
Well, but they had the episode, earlier where they were talking, and I don't know.
That's just of things that I could think of, because they had that thing where Mac had put that device in Coulson's office and had found the thing in the desk,
right?
Which is that had to do with Fury. So I was thinking maybe. That's what led me to believe that maybe it had something to do with Fury.
That's interesting.
Maybe Fury had given them a secret mission before he turned over the keys to Coulson.
All right. Well, we'll find out soon, I imagine. But yeah, it's going well. It's picking up, but
I mean, Fury's going to be back involved because he's in Avengers 2.
Yes, absolutely.
Because so.
I can't wait to see the fallout from those from the upcoming movies and how. You know, they've done it once. They did it well. What's next?
Yeah, I remember thinking because I saw Captain America: Winter Soldier, well before it hit theaters, and I've been thinking like, oh my God, how the heck are they gonna do that? But
No, it's.
I had been assured, because I actually on that same trip when I saw that I met Ming-Na,
Yeah.
Agent May, and she because she they told her that we had seen the movie, so we were discussing it, and she said that they had all seen the movie, and so
Yeah.
they all knew what was going on and that they were going to work it into the show. So.
Okay, here's one to toss at you because I'd seen someone sort of suggest this online and watching the episode, it felt very strongly to me. The way May was training Sky, it almost felt like she already knew. Because she was training her to control her emotions. It was like she knew ahead of time. I mean, it was very suspicious to me, the way it was presented.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much she knew. I think she knew something was wrong,
Yeah.
or she had a feeling something was wrong. Because then, as soon as everything started shaking, it was just clear she knew who was responsible.
Right.
She knew immediately that it was Scott who was doing
Yeah, and she immediately
it.
jumped to remember our training and so forth, which it was very quick. So I'm interested to see. That'll be interesting. All right. So that's good. All right. So movie news that we've quite recently had. They announced the name of the first standalone Star Wars movie.
Yes, Rogue One, whatever the heck that means.
Well, obviously, well,
I mean,
probably
it's a call sign, it sounds like,
it's a call sign. So,
but that's kind of a weird name for a movie, so I don't know. I don't know.
yeah, I mean, it could be,
Also, if you put,
go
whenever you
ahead.
put a number sign in it, whenever you put a number in a movie, it makes it sound like it's the first of several. So I don't know, too, but.
Yeah, I mean, or why wouldn't it be like Rogue Leader if they were the head of the squadron or something like that? But,
Exactly, and it tells you virtually nothing.
right.
It really does tell you virtually nothing about it.
What was all this stuff? Because I saw in our Slack chat room today, at least one of our guys was actually listening to the Disney conference call that was going on. And
He
Bob,
was he was watching the live tweets of people who were listening to it, but yeah.
oh, okay. And supposedly Bob Iger said something about renaming
Hollywood Studios, yep.
Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, apparently, when they do this call for shareholders, they have they do it in a somewhere at I don't know where exactly they do it, at Disney HQ or something, and they have a group of kids who can ask questions
Right.
too, because it's Disney and they like doing that sort of thing. So apparently, the 6-year-old boy, I think it was a boy, asked a question to Bob Iger. I don't know all the details, but in answering the question, he slipped up and said something about changing the name of the park. And it was clear that, yes, he really meant it, but that he really then, because he caught himself apparently, and so he didn't say anything else. He didn't say what they were
Right.
changing it to, but that they were going to change it. Which
Interesting.
they've been making a lot of changes to the park. Excuse me, they took out the sorcerer's hat already, which looks weird, man. If you're used to seeing it there, they're adding a whole bunch of stuff to Hollywood Studios. So changing the name is not an unreasonable idea, because it's not really going to have that kind of studio
Yeah, because
here
they got rid of the
anymore.
movie tour too, didn't they?
Another revamping, I think.
Were they revamping? I thought they were canning it, but.
I think no. I heard they were updating it. They were gonna
Okay.
because really the animatronics really
Yeah.
need updating,
Well,
and so do the movies really.
simply
So.
because there's so much, for example, at Disneyland, it seems like they're probably adding Star Wars stuff and maybe Marvel stuff now. Who knows? They've just closed the circular building. The old the something of imagination. I always forget
Oh
that.
yeah,
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
The building that used to move and then they stopped doing that
Innovations.
because it chopped people up or whatever. And then
Innovations is what you're talking about.
Interventions,
Innovations.
right.
Yeah.
Right. So and for the past 5 years it's had, like a House of the Future downstairs, and then they've had Marvel stuff upstairs and Xbox things and whatever.
Yeah.
And so there's talk that that's going to get replaced by something, who knows?
Well, it looks like they're going to be putting a Star Wars land thing. It looks like they're making room for it at Magic Kingdom. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
In Disney World, that is. Excuse me. But
so, I mean, that's a perfect place to put some more Star Wars stuff, too. So, yeah, things are looking interesting. I'm glad I have my annual pass. I'm going to keep that up.
Yeah, and of course, I've seen the pictures of Avatar World opening at Animal Kingdom.
So, interesting.
I don't know. I still think that's kind of silly, but I mean, it looks cool, but I don't know.
Well, what has to happen is that the next movies have to do really well, or else it's going to be a complete
flop. Yeah.
Flop. Yeah. I mean, you know, the first movie was visually stunning, but the story was Dances with Wolves, and
yeah. Yeah, that's okay. The thing is, it made pots of money. It made absolute tons of money. It was cool. Everybody liked it for a while. But it's one of those films where everybody talks about it for a little while, and then nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's not... I mean, there's things... It doesn't have enduring power the way something like Star Wars has, or... excuse me. Or even many other films. I mean, lots of films that just have a life after them because they just kind of become iconic, and Avatar just did not do that.
Right. Exactly. So we'll see. And I loved Animal Kingdom, so I hope they...
Oh, it's great.
Screwed up. The restaurant on the way to the Matterhorn is delicious. Not the Matterhorn, the Himalayan ride.
Everest.
Yeah, yeah, the Everest ride.
Expedition Everest.
There's a restaurant on your way up there.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
that was really good when we were there.
There's some very good restaurants there. I love Animal Kingdom. I just the only problem with it is that it closes earlier than the other parks because they have to let the animals sleep. You know, so
exactly. Yeah. All right. Any more? We're at a little over half an hour. I think we can probably keep it 30-40 minutes tonight. So, any more topics we want to cover before we get out of here?
I just mentioned I'm going to put up a review tomorrow, but I did get a chance to see a preview screening of Cinderella.
Very good.
And I expected it to be okay, but I actually was pleasantly surprised at how good it was. You know, excellent. Spectacular it wasn't. It had no huge surprises. Obviously, everybody knows the plot, but it's kind of cool. It has a lot of good British actors in it. You know, the prince is played by the guy who played Robb Stark in
right.
in Game of Thrones. Kind of a different role for him. But the wedding goes much better in this one. my wife and I like to watch Downton Abbey, so I had seen the actress who plays Cinderella herself and also one of the stepsisters. Derek Jacobi, who's a, you know, a venerable British actor, yes. plays the king. Yeah, so there's some really... And
the best master from Doctor Who ever.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very briefly, but yeah.
One episode, two episodes.
Yes. It's a lot of fun. And Kate Blanchett does a spectacular job as the stepmother. You know, not just being cruel, but she actually gives her some depth. Like, you can actually, you don't think she's doing the right thing, obviously, because she's being horrible, but you can sort of understand why she's doing it to a degree.
That's great. So more money for Disney.
Yeah, and Frozen Fever is fun. You know, it's definitely fun, and there's something they do something that was clearly intended so that they could sell a new plush. You know,
okay.
It's just obvious. Right. It's like, oh, it's something cute that happened. I don't want to say too much about it, but you'll know it when you see it.
Right. Oh, okay. All right, so last thing before we go, I'll bring this one up too because I'm really enjoying the ramp up to this. Oh, no, actually, that's what I was going to do. I was going to talk about Gravity Falls. Oh, the last episode of Gravity Falls, the mind-blowing... All right, spoilers. If you haven't seen the most recent episode of Gravity Falls and you want to, you can sign off now. But the last episode of Gravity Falls, basically showing that everything that's happened up till now has been whatever, Grunkle Stan has had a secret goal the whole time, and he finally pulls it off. And so apparently what I get from this is that the whole reason he's been there and has been doing this for however long he's been there has been he had to be there at a specific time and have the machinery ready to open up some kind of rift, either temporal or spatial, dimensional, whatever, to rescue his brother.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
OMG.
Yeah, and as Alex Hirsch has said, that there were hints to it, you know, previously.
Yeah.
Like little things like the fact that the license plate has a different name on it. excuse me, that you keep seeing when you see inside Stan's mind, you see like the broken swing set that has two swings on it,
right.
You know, things like that. You know, hints. I mean, there was nothing that you could have made the whole conclusion from, I think, but it was it was really well done.
Yeah,
and very believable that you see that, you know, Dipper really doesn't know what to think at all, and then doesn't trust Stan, and Mabel finally decides to, which is totally in character.
Yeah. Fantastic. So catch up with that show if you haven't already. I'm enjoying the heck out of it. So I love it. You know, it makes me feel, I'll compare it to one of my favorite cartoons of all time and the best incarnation of Scooby-Doo, which was Scooby-Doo Monsters or Mystery Incorporated. Which I will argue with anyone is one of the top five best whole series of animation storytelling ever done.
And it's on Netflix now.
I urge everyone to go watch it in its entirety because it's mind-boggling and gives you a whole different perspective on the archetypes of the Scooby Gang and dimensions and so forth. But yeah, I love this kind of myth building inside animated stories that sort of they play you along and then suddenly go, oh, hello, this is what it's really about.
And they've been doing this from the beginning. I mean,
yeah.
Hirsch made that. I spoke to him on the phone just before the episode aired, and he made it very clear they've had this planned with Stan's brother from the beginning. This is the way it was going to be, that he's going to be the guy, you know, the six-fingered guy. But it's on his left hand, not his right, so he isn't Count Reuben. But so it's not like something as I put in my article about it. It's not something like Lost, you know, where they had all these mysteries that they clearly had no idea where they were going.
Right. Right.
And so half of them
had the right
never being resolved.
Right.
You know. Or something like Battlestar Galactica, or they end up resolving it in the stupidest way possible. Not that I'm bitter.
All right. And on that note, I think we can call this one good. This has been an excellent episode. This has been the Geek Dads episode number 145. I'm Ken Denmead, publisher of Geek Dad. He's Matt Blum, the editor-in-chief. Matt, thanks so much again.
You're very, very welcome, and thank you as always for hosting, Ken.
Absolutely, and everybody, thank you for listening. You know what? Make sure you, if you are a fan of this podcast or of Geek Dad in general, get on over to Patreon, patreon.com/geekdad, and support us. We always need your help. We need to pay some bills and keep this thing going. You know, a dollar a month, whatever. You know, if you already pledge to PBS, to heck with them. Give it to us instead. We are so much more important than public radio or television. So, and thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time. So long.
So long.
Geek Dad. Geek Dad. Geek Dad.